From DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
So one of the things that we have talked about now for kind of a while is, and I actually mentioned this off the top of the show yesterday, there is just less overall, I think you would call rat poison around this Georgia team, this Georgia offseason than I would have expected to hear. Rat poison, as we said yesterday, is, you know, that excessive praise, the stuff that Nick Saban back in the fall said he didn't like and he didn't want any part of for his team. And Kirby Smart's also talked about some of that kind of, you know, stuff as well. Now, I'm sure that Kirby's not paying a ton of attention to the stuff that's being said this time of year. He's busy organizing some recruiting stuff. I'm sure he's got some vacation coming up. So he may not be paying that close of attention to everything that's being said around the media right now. But nonetheless, some of the media stuff about Georgia, it would be unfair for me to call it negative, because I don't think negative is what it is, but maybe skeptical is a better word. The media just seems to be a little more skeptical of Georgia than I would have expected. And I actually kind of enjoy bringing some of this to the show, not because I'm trying to troll my own audience here. That's obviously not what I'm trying to do. But I do think it sort of sets up a scenario for Georgia this fall that's actually pretty enticing, that is, you know, somewhat enjoyable, that Georgia once again has more critics to vanquish, once again has more to prove. You know, Kirby Smart has you know, been asked about, hey, how do you sort of change your mindset as you go from the hunter to the hunted? Well, maybe Georgia still gets to be in the hunt here a little bit based on some of the skeptical claims the media continues to make about Georgia here. Let me give you the latest example of this, and this is sort of an SEC country exclusive. One of our reporters, Andrew Astaford, sat down with the SEC network analyst Greg McElroy on a number of subjects. And one of the things that Andrew asked Greg McElroy, who obviously you see on TV all the time, and you know him as a former Alabama quarterback, is, hey, which upset could you see happening in the SEC this season? Which SEC team do you think of as maybe being on upset alert at some point in time this year? And McElroy gave an answer that I think that Georgia fans will at least cause them to raise an eyebrow a bit, because the team that McElroy thinks could be Georgia is not necessarily one that I think Georgia fans necessarily have circled right now. Let me show you, for those of you watching on video, what McElroy said. And obviously, if you're listening in, I'll read this to you. Greg McElroy tells SEC Country that, I would say Georgia at Missouri on September 22nd. You got to hang a lot of points on them. I think they're good. I think they're going to be a handful. He's talking about Missouri here. Down the stretch in 2017, they were playing really well. So I'm a believer in what they've got going, at least for this year. So Greg McElroy from the SEC Network, speaking to SEC Country, says that he thinks that Georgia, the reigning SEC champion, a team that was in the college football playoff a year ago, could be on upset alert versus Missouri. Now, for those of you that pay even somewhat close attention to the story, I don't think I have to tell you why someone like McElroy would like Missouri in a game against Georgia. It is a road game for the Dogs. Dogs haven't lost in Columbia, Missouri, since Missouri's been in the SEC. But nonetheless, you know, in addition to the fact that Georgia has to travel to Columbia for that game, the other big issue here is the Missouri quarterback, Drew Locke. Locke comes back for his final season there at Missouri, and there is some thought that this could be a first-round draft pick here in the 2019 NFL draft, maybe even a top five pick. He's gotten a lot of love from guys like Mel Kiper, and also Bucky Brooks recently from NFL.com also sort of laid out Locke as one of the players in the 2018 season that he's sort of more looking forward to seeing from an NFL standpoint than anybody else in college football. What Brooks says is, don't let the low completion percentage fool you. It's just 54.5% from a year ago. Locke is a pinpoint passer with the kind of A-plus arm talent coaches covet in a quarterback one, or as he says, QB1. He can rifle the ball to every area of the field with zip, velocity, or touch. He also displays outstanding timing and anticipation. So Bucky Brooks from NFL.com seems impressed with Drew Locke. That's pretty much putting him in lockstep, no pun intended, with other pundits and analysts this offseason who think that Drew Locke could be one of the stories in college football for this upcoming season. Not because he's going to lead Missouri to a championship, but because he could play so well that he does propel himself high in the NFL draft. And obviously, anytime you go into an opposing team stadium against a first-round draft pick-style quarterback, you're obviously in for a bit of a challenge. And this information, by the way, is nothing new for Kirby Smart. Even going back, you know, to last year in the game against Missouri, in which obviously Locke made some big throws, Jamon Moore had some big catches. Even back then, you know, Kirby Smart was very clear that he does have great respect for this Missouri offense. In fact, here is Kirby Smart from last fall.
Good quarterback that's accurate, that knows where to throw the ball, can attack a defense, and that's certainly what Mizzou has. I think this kid's got as strong as arms as anybody in the league. He's got two really outstanding wide outs, not to mention some big tight ends, and they do a great job of the RPO game. They're very hard to defend last year, and they're very hard to defend this year. We got to have a good plan, and we got to play well.
So that is Kirby Smart before the game against Missouri. Great respect for the Missouri offense. And I think most people would say that in Athens a season ago that the Missouri offense was as advertised. Locke did make some big throws. There were some deep touchdown scores in for Missouri in that game. And once again, after the game, Kirby Smart was very honest that this Missouri passing attack is for real.
I think there's always a little credit given to them and always a little blame given to us. I mean, at the end of the day, somebody's got responsibility, somebody's got coverage, and they got to do a good job. But give them credit. Their quarterback's got a big arm, and that kid's a fast receiver. You know, I mean, if you take out two plays, you really don't play that bad a defense. It's 126 yards or something on two plays. That's almost half their offense. And we knew before the game, we said, don't give up big plays, and you got a chance. And we gave up two big plays. But you know what? We'll learn from that. We'll get better from that. And that defense needed a wake-up call. Need a wake-up call to go out and play better.
So quick summary here. Greg McElroy, SEC Network, says Georgia on upset alert against Missouri. Bucky Brooks from NFL.com says Drew Locke may be one of the best quarterbacks in the world of college football this season. Kirby Smart himself talking about the big playability of the Missouri offense. And we saw that on display against Georgia a year ago. But not to spoil the end of this story here, I don't have to probably tell you, though, that I am not worried about Missouri. And it's not because I think that Georgia's going to win every game easily in 2018. Georgia's going to get challenged plenty, probably. I just don't think Missouri's going to be one of those teams. There are probably a few reasons for this. You hear Kirby Smart talking about Jamon Moore, the receiver who had big plays against the Dogs a season ago. Well, he's gone. He's not a part of this Missouri team anymore, so that's a challenge for Drew Locke to deal with. I think maybe more importantly than that, the guy that was designing some of that really impressive passing attack a season ago, Josh Heupel, the offensive coordinator, is also gone as well. He's the head coach at UCF now. In his place is Derek Dooley. Yes, the same Derek Dooley that was patrolling around the Tennessee sideline in orange pants not all that long ago. I would assume that Dooley is a downgrade from Heupel, because if Derek Dooley was a good offensive coordinator, he would have been calling plays for someone before this upcoming fall. I'm not worried about the Derek Dooley offense here. And maybe more important than any of that in terms of why I don't think that Georgia is on upset alert versus Missouri actually goes back to the Georgia game a year ago against Missouri. Yes, there were some big passing plays for the Tigers there on that day in Athens, but it was also a day in which Georgia pretty well asserted itself in a pretty big way, showed some real toughness that became the hallmark of this team throughout the rest of the season and into the college football playoff. In fact, that was one of the things after the game that Kirby Smart liked most about his team, and it was one of the things that probably foreshadowed future success. Here's Kirby again.
I thought it was an electric atmosphere. Dog walk was one of the best it's ever been. They carried us through some tough times. Thought we showed some grit tonight and responded. It's just like a boxing match when you got to be able to take the guy's best punch. And we knew they had a vertical passing game. We thought they had the best quarterback throwing the ball that we would face, along with the best combination of speed.
So, yeah, I mean, listen, that toughness was on display there. We saw Georgia show up in a big way with that in a lot of other games in 2018. But that wasn't the only thing that Georgia showed against the Tigers there that day. It was also the day in which I think the Georgia passing game started to come into its own a bit. And when you think about Drew Locke against Missouri, you also have to think about what Missouri's going to have to defend against Jake Fromm. And the quarterback that Jake Fromm is now, we started finding out who that guy was back then, because that was a day in which the Georgia passing game did start coming into its own just a bit. And it's a lot more for Missouri to deal with in 2018. Here's more from Kirby on that subject.
I thought that was probably the sloppiest game as far as organizationally and the things we got to do to be a great team. But I don't want to diminish what that offense just went out there and did, because they executed well, they ran the ball well, they threw and caught the ball well. Jake made good decisions. I thought they grew up from a passing standpoint.
Grew up from a passing standpoint. Jake Fromm made good decisions. And at the time, that was a headline. You know, you go back to when this game was played, the idea that Fromm's making good decisions and the passing game is growing up, we didn't know then what the end of the season was going to be, and we didn't know how big of a role that Jake Fromm was going to play in all of that. But this was, in some respects, along with the Mississippi State game probably too, a bit of a coming out party for Jake Fromm. And he left the Missouri game with plenty of confidence that he'll use in Columbia here in 2018. One more clip from Kirby Smart on that topic.
Seeing a little more confidence, making good decisions. He understands the game. He knows where to go with the ball. He sees coverage as well. Made a mistake, made a poor decision. But quarterbacks are going to make those, and hopefully he learns from it and continues to grow. But he's getting better as a player, and he's putting us in the right plays, And the guys caught the ball. That was the biggest difference. They threw and caught the ball when they had the opportunity.
So here's a statement I'm going to make to sort of sum all of this up that a lot of Georgia fans will probably agree with, and a lot of non-Georgia fans, especially the stray Missouri fan who may hear some of this, and they may want to throw eggs at the screen or eggs at the device if you're listening to the podcast or the radio show or something like that. I'm not entirely sure that Drew Locke plays better than Jake Fromm when these two teams get together in Columbia in the 2018 season. The media seems to think that. The media seems to think that Drew Locke's a top five pick. Well, I think that Jake Fromm, younger than Drew Locke, is also right there in that discussion as well. We're going to hear some of that over the course of the coming days in terms of, you know, just how big of an impact Fromm could make on the 2018 season. It is not a foregone conclusion to me that the better of the two quarterbacks is going to play for the home team when Georgia and Missouri get together later on this fall. That's how much of a respect I have for Jake Fromm. But overall, I'm not bothered by Greg McElroy's, you know, upset alert status for Georgia. It fits right in with the conversation we've been having now for a while. There is still a, hey, can you do it more than 1 year conversation going around and around Georgia. Maybe it's moving the goalposts on the part of the media and the pundits and the experts. Maybe it's not. But there is still that sense of, hey, you did this last year, but what can you do as an encore for 2018? I think that's a comfortable spot for Georgia to be in. I think if Kirby Smart were here right now, he'd say the same thing. Put us on upset alert against every single team we play. That's fine. No problem there. We're going to stay focused on the week-to-week struggle the same way that Georgia did in 2017. I don't know how this season's going to end for Georgia necessarily right here at the start of the conversation. In the spring, but I have a feeling that Georgia may prove some of its critics wrong by the time these games start being played this fall. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Thank you so much for being with us, no matter how you get to our program. You watch us on video, a lot of ways to check us out there. 10 a.m. live, the Dog Nation Facebook, Dog Nation YouTube, Dog Nation Twitter feed. You can check out the show on video. You can also go back and watch it on demand anytime you want. We air live at 10 a.m. Eastern Time every Monday through Friday. We're glad you're with us there. On the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960, The Ref. We love our friends in the Classic City. I love Athens, and I love being on the radio there every single day. It's a real point of pride for me. Of course, you can check us out in podcast form. Wherever podcasts are found, Apple Podcasts, Android devices, the world-famous DogNation.com, SoundCloud. We're just really glad that you've checked out Dog Nation Daily here today. And, of course, we are brought to you, as always, by our friends at Marco's Pizza. And when I think about Marco's Pizza, I want you to think about a special reminder they have for you to say hello to authentic Italian-quality pizza from Marco's. Because every pizza is topped with three signature cheeses that make for the perfect melt every single time. You can order today from Marcos.com. I've told you before, my family loves Marco's Pizza. We love sitting around the back deck or the front porch or even in the living room on a rainy Wednesday like this and enjoying a little Marco's Pizza. When you check it out, you're going to love it as well. By the way, for our friends on video, special treat later on. After the regular Dog Nation Daily broadcast ends, we're actually going to have a chance to welcome onto our video set here today Pat Giamarco, the founder of Marco's Pizza. I've got a special gift I want to give him as a way of saying thanks for his support of Dog Nation Daily and thanking him for allowing us to bring this show to all of you each and every day. That is going to be a lot of fun coming up after we're done here today on Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza. By the way, it's also a Wednesday. Wednesdays mean Mike Johnson here, my partner from SEC Country Live. I'm going to get into this subject with Mike in just a moment, kind of his thoughts on two things here. You know, should Georgia be worried about a game against Missouri? And the sort of larger topic of why is there so much skepticism about Georgia a year after the Dogs won the SEC? It's not a problem. It could actually be a good thing for Georgia. But is it as robust as I think it is? We'll give Mike Johnson a chance to talk about that in just a moment. Before we do that, though, if you'll allow me to, I actually want to go back to yesterday's show just for a moment. Now, I didn't have a chance to pull this audio for you, so you'll need to go back and listen to the show. Yesterday's episode of Dog Nation Daily on Tuesdays, of course, we bring in Jeff Sintel, and Jeff was on the show. And one of the things that I talked to Jeff about was something that I couldn't help but notice as of late, something that's gotten my attention. You know, going back to the Grayson Four from a few days ago when those four kids from Grayson High School all made their college decisions, you know, the guy that Georgia was involved with, obviously, was the five-star linebacker, Owen Papo. Papo chooses Auburn. We've kind of dealt with that now a million times. I think that eventually Papo may end up as a part of the Georgia class. If he doesn't, Georgia's got other options at linebacker. We've kind of covered that ground, you know, pretty intently. We've also spoken about the fact that, you know, Georgia just wasn't that in on the other guys there, specifically a linebacker like Kevin Harris, who, you know, chose Alabama, or as you see on your screen, for those of you watching the video here, Wanya Morris, the offensive lineman who chose Tennessee over Auburn. And it's one thing, you know, Georgia can't recruit every kid in the state of Georgia evenly and equally and can't cast that wide of a net, but it got my attention when Morris got a fifth star recently. He was named to the 24/7 Sports Composite. He's now a five-star offensive tackle, one of the top 10 tackles in the country for the class of 2019. And I asked Jeff yesterday, why wasn't Georgia more involved in Wanya Morris? What was this about? And I thought that Jeff gave a very interesting answer, a very, I think, specific and honest answer. Go back and listen to the show if you missed it. But he talked about the fact that if Georgia's not in on Morris in that regard, the odds are they've got another tackle or two for 2019 they're paying close attention to. And I'm obviously going to get some dog fans curious. I'm sure there's comments about this on the Dog Nation forum about who those tackles might be. Is it Xavier Truss? That's a guy that's certainly been written about at DogNation.com. Are there others? This is going to be one of those interesting subjects and storylines to follow during the summer. But Wanya Morris upgraded to a five-star, not really involved with Georgia really at all. That's really going to turn some eyebrows. Let's talk more about that to Mike Johnson and a whole lot more right now. It is good to have you with us. Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza. Hope you enjoy the rest of the program. And every afternoon, 3 p.m. Eastern time on the SEC Country Facebook, YouTube, Twitter page. It's our video channels there. You can check out SEC Country Live. My good friend and partner on that program is Mike Johnson, the former Alabama All-American, and he joins us now here on Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza. Mike, thanks for taking the time to be a part of the show today. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, man. It's good to be a part of the show again.
So I want to talk in just a few minutes about a big new thing that you've got going on. Now, for our audience, it may not quite be their cup of tea, but they may know some people who really will like this. And so we'll give you a chance to tell us all about that coming up in a moment, because I'm really excited about this. But if you don't mind, before we get into that, can we address a couple of the issues that I was talking about before you got here? Specifically on this, I read a comment that SEC Network analyst Greg McElroy had given to SEC Country about the SEC team that he thought could be on upset alert here for the 2018 season. And McElroy mentioned Georgia traveling to Missouri. Do you think on the road at Missouri is a dangerous game for Georgia?
You know, I think there's a couple different ways to look at it, and I understand what he's saying. Listen, I think there's a way to be offended by it if you're a Georgia fan, but the fact of the matter is he's saying upset alert, right? I mean, that means that you're favored in the game. That means you're probably heavily favored in the game. I think that Greg's looking at it and saying, listen, this is an early in the year game. It's the fourth game of the season for the Georgia Bulldogs. It's a place they struggled a couple of years ago back in 2016. It's a senior-laden offense, really. I mean, they have seniors and juniors all over the field. Drew Locke's always dangerous. They've got some weapons in the passing game. They're going to be looking to challenge Georgia's secondary. So, listen, I don't give it much credence. I would not be betting my money on Missouri, but that's why it's an upset. And I think you look early in the season, you look for Georgia trying to find their stride in terms of leadership, in terms of stability, in terms of you know, who you're going to be able to hang your hat on, what you're going to be offensively. And maybe you go on the road early in the season, maybe you get caught off guard. I would be aiming more along the lines of week two there at South Carolina if I'm looking at an upset alert. But, you know, I think Greg looks at it and sees Drew Locke and sees a guy that really can sling the ball over the field. Maybe that would be a challenge for Georgia's secondary.
Well, let me be clear about this. I don't agree with the thought process that Missouri is going to beat Georgia, but I also am not offended by it either. I think this is a comfortable spot for all college football teams to be in when you've got, you know, some doubting, some skeptical questions. It gives you a chance to go out there and prove somebody wrong. Alabama loves this kind of stuff. I think that Georgia might love it too. And as far as my reasoning, and maybe I should have explained this better a few minutes ago, but as far as my reasoning for why I don't think Missouri is the kind of team to upset Georgia, you know, if you look at 2017, you know, Georgia's losses were to teams that sort of out-Georgia'd Georgia, right? I mean, you know, Georgia's got its game plan. It wants to be physical with its lines of scrimmage. It wants to make, you know, smart decisions with the passing game. And they faced an Alabama team that just did that stuff a little bit more. Even Auburn, who we kind of think of, I think, sometimes as a finesse team. I mean, Mike, you saw the game in November. When Auburn beat Georgia in the regular season, that wasn't a finesse version of Auburn. They were physical with the offensive line that day, physical with the defensive line that day for, you know, various reasons. I think they had, you know, an opportunity to do that in a way they weren't able to sort of recapture that in December. But that's who beats Georgia. It's teams that find a way to out-Georgia Georgia, do more of the kind of physical stuff that Georgia wants to do. I just don't think that right now, and I could have egg on my face this fall, but I don't think right now Georgia's the kind of team that's going to end up in some sort of cat-and-mouse deal where it loses to one of these excessively finesse football teams, which is what I think of Missouri as, a Big 12-style team playing in the SEC. How would you respond to that?
No, listen, I completely agree with what you're talking about right now, because this is how I would build my football team, right? You build them from the inside out, D.A. You look at the big bodies they've brought in. You look at the defensive linemen, the pass rushers, the linebackers, the offensive linemen that Georgia's brought in for the last 2 years. that's how they're building their football team. Missouri is built from the outside in, right? It's you know, it's threats on the perimeter. It's speed out of the backfield. It's a quarterback with a big arm. It's play-action passing. You know, I have a hard time believing something like that is going to go up against Kirby Smart's front seven and the big boys up front of that offense and be able to really tame them, because it's just two different styles. And, you know, I've said this about Alabama in the past, but a lot of times it's the teams that can sling it around, that catch the breaks. I don't see Missouri being that team this year. I think that they're going to have to try to create their own breaks, and I just don't really – listen – Derek Dooley, as an offensive coordinator, man, you're going to have to sell me on that. Like, I'm going to have to see that with my own eyes, being an explosive offense, be able to beat a Georgia defense this year. I agree with you. A lot of times it is the teams that try to play big boy football. I mean, you can pick out some other teams on Georgia's schedule. That game in Baton Rouge is going to be a tough one for them. So I'm with you all the way. I understand what Greg's saying, and you call it upset alert for a reason, and you look at the schedule and where it's at on the schedule and traveling all the way to Columbia, Missouri. This one, to me, is a lock in Georgia's favor. I don't look at this game and think of 2016. I look at this game and think of 2017, and I think that Georgia's going to be able to shut down that passing game very handily.
For me, this fits into a conversation that has actually been kind of ongoing here in our program for the last few days, the fact that, you know, Georgia's a reigning SEC champion, kind of the new kid on the block in terms of brand-new $7 million a year contract for Kirby Smart in the college football playoff. There is at least some thought that Georgia might have spent this offseason as the toast of college football, the next big thing in the sport. Instead, there has been some skepticism, whether it be Greg McElroy saying that Georgia could lose a game here, or, you know, some of the other thoughts that we've sort of had here in terms of the Brad Edwards clips we played the other day, for instance, where there was some doubt about whether or not Kirby Smart even was deserving of that contract that he got right now. And it kind of fits into something that you said last week that I thought was kind of a fascinating conversation. And I was hoping we could pick back up on that here today, and that, you know, you pointed out that Georgia was in the playoff a year ago, but we've had teams that have been sort of one-hit wonders in the playoff in the past. Is that what this is about from the national media here? Not to say that there's an overwhelming level of negativity about Georgia, but there is some skepticism. Is this one of those deals of the media wants to decide, is this a Michigan State, a Washington, a team that made the playoff one time, or is this a Clemson, Ohio State, Alabama, a team good enough to sort of get into this deal multiple times? Is that the sort of wait-and-see attitude that we're seeing right now from the media when it comes to Georgia?
I think it definitely is. And you know, let's just be clear here. I think the overwhelming majority of media members really love Georgia. I mean, you're seeing them land inside of the top five, the preseason top five, for a lot of different reasons. I think that when the media sets out throughout the spring and throughout the summer and they're looking at making picks, they're weighing a lot of different things, right? They're weighing, hey, how many people are coming back on this football team? Where were the, you know, who were the statistical leaders, and are they still on the team? Do you have sophomores that are rising into juniors? Did you have rising juniors that are now seniors? Do you have leaders? Do you have a perennial team? And, you know, I think that for a long time, people questioned whether or not Alabama could get back to where they were when they lose people. But Nick Saban's proven that over time. Dabo Swinney's got a ton of talent returning on defense this year. Washington, the team that returns like 18 starters. Mississippi State's the toast of the town. They're returning 19 starters. You know, it's the question still lies, I think, in a lot of people's eyes around college football. And if I'm just being honest, that, hey, listen, you know, which brand is this? Is this the brand that really Kirby Smart's building a dynasty like I think he is? You know, can he come back every single year? Or is this one of those teams that you have to wait for the cycle? Do you have to wait for Jake Fromm to be a junior or a senior? Or do you think he can pick right back up where he left off? And so I think that's the hesitation. I think that a lot of media pundits are hesitant to dive in, you know, with both feet there. But I'm kind of all in on it, where I believe what Kirby Smart's building, and I mentioned a second ago, building it from the inside out, building it from the offensive line, building it with strong offensive tackles, offensive guards, you know, backup linemen that are five stars. That's how you build a football team, to me, and that's what makes it easier to transition from one year to the next, no matter where your leadership's coming from, no matter where your stats are coming from. Get your playmakers and your talent on the field. I think that's what Kirby Smart's doing.
Well, let me change the subject here for a moment. I also talked before you came on today about Wanya Morris, the now five-star offensive tackle that's a commitment for Tennessee for the 2019 class. On SEC Country Live, you've talked about Morris before. You're a huge fan of what he brings to the table. And, Mike, as you know, when you Google search Wanya Morris's name, you don't see Georgia pop up very often. Morris and Georgia just haven't been connected now for quite some time. A little bit last year, but not so much in the last few months here. And I talked to Jeff Sintel about this yesterday here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza, and, you know, Jeff really alluded to the fact that he thinks that Georgia just has offensive linemen that it likes. I hate to say better than Morris, but maybe offensive linemen he thinks are a better fit for the program, including maybe a guy like, say, Xavier Truss, who's just bigger than Morris, even though he's not as highly rated of a prospect. What do you think of now Georgia kind of evaluating offensive line prospects, maybe different than other programs? Obviously, Tennessee and Auburn, you know, thought Morris was the cream of the crop. That's why they went after him so hard. But he's not as big as a guy like Xavier Truss. And Georgia recently has shown that it really likes these big offensive linemen. What do you think of Georgia being heavily committed, no pun intended, to the heavy offensive linemen, even maybe sometimes at the expense of an elite prospect like Morris, who's just not quite as big?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting dynamic to look at. You know, I think when you look deeper into what Georgia's trying to do, first of all, I'm sure there's been some contact with Wanya Morris in Georgia. I'm sure that Georgia – I think that if Wanya Morris was a slam dunk to Georgia, you know, if he grew up a Georgia fan and he wanted to be in Athens and he wanted to come to all the games, then I think it would be a lot easier for Georgia to look at it. I don't know that they look at Wanya and think that he's worth the fight. You know, for lack of a better terminology, I don't know that Georgia looks at it and says, boy, you know, we really got to go all in on this guy. I think they do have some bigger prospects they look at and say, you know, maybe this guy fits better, maybe this guy doesn't. I look at Wanya Morris, and I see a great base. I see, you know, kind of a bare template, if you will, of an offensive lineman to where, listen, it's not a guy you have to come in and carve 30 pounds off of. This is a guy who can kind of be molded into what you want him to be. But I don't fault Georgia at all for maybe looking the other direction. I mean, listen, they've landed talented offensive linemen. They've landed talent in offensive tackles for the last couple of years. And so if they want to kind of pick their spots and say, boy, you know, as opposed to lateral movement here, we really want somebody that's a north and south guy, you know, as opposed to a guy that's a great pass protector like Wanya Morris is, maybe we want a road grader in certain spots. That's the spot that Georgia and Kirby Smart have found themselves in, isn't it? Where you can kind of pick your poison and pick your spots and say, listen, this guy fits our program or he doesn't. I think that's just the elite level they've been recruiting at lately.
Speaking of offensive line, you know, one of the things we talked about yesterday was the outlook for guys like Elijah Holyfield, DeAndre Swift, Brian Harrod, even the two freshmen, James Cook and Zamir White, once White's back healthy again, in terms of having to replace two very good running backs in Nick Chubb and Sonny Michel. And I think that the one thing that a lot of Georgia fans, Mike, are holding out hope for here is that while these five running backs I just mentioned are all good, they may actually still also be aided by the fact that this Georgia offensive line at least looks to be better in 2018 than it was in 2017. How much do you think an improved offensive line, if that indeed is the case for Georgia, how much does it help these backs in terms of being able to fill the sizable shoes left behind by Chubb and Michelle?
Yeah, that's the beauty of it, isn't it? And, you know, we went through that at Alabama when I was in school. We lost, you know, from the 08 to the 2009 season, we lost three offensive linemen that were starters from 08 to 09. We lost our starting tailback in Glenn Coffey. We lost a number of other playmakers. And everybody wondered, boy, you know, can Alabama get back? And that's kind of why I skewed towards Georgia in this whole conversation of national pundits not wanting to probably give them the due credit just yet, because you have to kind of prove it. Listen, we replaced those three starting offensive linemen in 09. We replaced Glenn Coffey with a guy named Mark Ingram. Trent Richardson became a backup that year, and we rushed for a ton of yards. And that was such a big deal, because you have those linemen, because you have the scheme, because you brought back your offensive coordinator, because you have wide receivers that are willing to block on the edge, that play with some tenacity, because you have running backs that understand that this is a physical football team and this is a physical style of play, and you have to go to battle for that each day. So I think that's something that's instilled throughout fall camp, the always fall forward mentality that you're going to see out of guys like Holyfield and Zamir White, and the list goes on. And I think that makes it that much easier with that big offensive line in front of them. I think that working together and getting those, you know, getting that scheme even further entrenched into what Georgia football is, I think that helps them out tremendously.
You've got a great new show. I want to tell Dog Nation Daily listeners and viewers about that coming up in a moment. Before that, let me squeeze in one more quick subject here. You know, D'Angelo Gibbs, Mike, I believe, is just a potentially huge portion and important part of Georgia's secondary here. It was a really big recruiting battle that Georgia won for 2017. And as you know, Gibbs was not enrolled in classes during the spring. He is coming back into classes now, hopes to be back and a contributing member of the football team here this summer heading into the fall. How tough is this when you are away from football, when you're not going through the grind of spring practice, when you're not in the rhythm of a class schedule? Obviously, you can't put yourself into Gibbs' shoes, and you can't put yourself inside of Gibbs' head here, but how big of a challenge is this to quickly get reacclimated to, you know, the kind of, you know, rigorous life that a college athlete has to endure here? What's it going to be like for Gibbs, in your mind, kind of getting back into a full go?
It's just tough. Listen, you were with me all year last year when I had the skepticism of Arden Key stepping away from the spring from LSU, and I just said there's just no way you get back to that level. And then the reports come out, you know, he's gained 15, 20 pounds, and Ed Orgeron is trying to say, well, you know, he looks good, it's all muscle. It's not, man. There's nothing that can compare to a college strength and conditioning program really holding your nose to the grinder. There's nothing that can get you in shape the way that college strength and conditioning coach can, and competing with your teammates. I mean, there's just nothing like it, especially in the South when you're going through that summer humidity. I know guys used to go to indoor facilities and work out on turf and air conditioning. It's just different. Being around your teammates and competing on a day-in, day-out basis and having that strength coach in your face and forcing you to do every lift and counting every repetition, it's just a different feel. And, you know, as much as any guy likes to say, you know, I'm really working hard, I'm making sure I'm staying on track, it's just not the same. And so if you want that guy to really excel, he's got to, you know, step back into that program and get going sooner rather than later. Now, do I think that he's possibly a guy that can do that? Absolutely. Do I think there's a ton of upside? Absolutely. But the question will remain until he gets firmly entrenched back into what that program's trying to do. You know, what is he going to bring to the table? And I think that's a fair question moving forward.
Mike, you've got a great new show coming up, much like we do Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza every single day here on the Dog Nation video channels. For our Alabama friends who follow the SEC country stuff, you've got a brand new daily Alabama show that's going to be getting started. Now, for a lot of Georgia fans, that sounds terrible. But obviously, a lot of the people watching and listening to this show right now have friends and family who are Alabama fans, and they're fans of yours from Dog Nation, I should say from SEC Country Live. In fact, our buddy Michael Morrow watching on Facebook said he planned on watching your show just to support you because he likes SEC Country Live so much. So, Mike, would you mind telling our audience, for the folks who know Alabama fans and who would like to see them enjoy some of the same content from an Alabama perspective we provide for Georgia every single day, tell us more about Roll Tide Daily that's coming up here on the Alabama SEC Country video channels. What can you tell us about it?
Yeah, Roll Tide Daily starts at 1 p.m. Eastern time on Monday. That's this coming Monday, May 21st, and couldn't be more excited, man. I have a lot to uphold in the name of Brandon Adams and what all you've been able to do on video and, you know, being able to bring the best to Georgia fans daily. I'm going to try to do the same thing. We're going to do a lot of the same kind of talk. It's going to be a little bit different. Obviously, bringing a former player's perspective will be a big deal on my show, but a lot of interviews, a lot of former players, a lot of what did Nick Saban say today, a lot of, you know, outlook toward the season, and a lot of fun stuff. We're going to try to have a lot of energy. And I know that, like you said, Dog Nation fans will probably have to hold their nose anytime my show comes on the screen. But hopefully the friends and family get a chance to check it out, and I hope you guys enjoy it.
Here is all I ask. Just don't let the people in the comment section bash me too bad, please.
Listen, I'm inviting the Georgia fans over right now. I'm inviting you guys to come over and talk it up. Bama fans love to talk trash and back and forth. I'm sure that'll be a fun comment section for sure.
Actually, that could actually end up being pretty fun here this fall, Mike. We'll look forward to that. We'll see you this afternoon, SEC Country Live. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks a lot, brother.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, Mike Johnson brings up a pretty good point there at the end that, you know, one of the best things with SEC Country Live is the kind of good-natured back-and-forth ribbing that goes on between the fan bases. With that, Mike doing his Alabama Daily show with these two teams maybe on a collision course for December once again, that actually could end up being a pretty fun back-and-forth. And what I love about Mike is that, you know, obviously he's an Alabama guy. He doesn't make any, you know, bones about that. He loves his Crimson Tide, as he should. He had a great career there. But he's also always good-natured about it, with whether it be, you know, the Georgia folks that watch the show or the Tennessee guys, the Auburn guys, you know, whomever. You know, he's just got sort of a good attitude about that. And I think that Mike's done a great job kind of cultivating a comment section in SEC Country Live that's just doesn't take itself too seriously, right? I mean, everybody loves their team. Everybody loves the going back and forth. I think the people that watch this show and watch that show or listen to this show and watch that show would probably attest is that everybody gets along pretty well, which is kind of a nice thing to see in this day and age. Speaking of the SEC, let's do the SEC through right now. And, you know, in a couple of minutes, I've got a Dog Day Q&A on the subject I'm about to address right now. I almost did this yesterday. I didn't have time to sort of give it its full, you know, width to a discuss. I wanted to sort of deal with this right now. Now, I don't mind telling you, on SEC Country Live earlier this week, I got called a whiner for even bringing this topic up. But I don't think I'm wrong about this, and I'm thinking that some of you won't think that I'm wrong either. So Chris Lowe, who I think is a great reporter, a longtime college football voice, a guy whose stuff I like to read, who when he's on radio shows, I stop and listen, Chris Lowe is on the Paul Feinbaum Show. He had spent some time with Nick Saban, and Lowe tells Feinbaum that after spending time with Saban, he believes that Saban's going to coach for a long time, probably into his 70s. And the point that I made was, is that Saban may coach into his 70s. He may do that. Some coaches have. Bill Snyder's doing that right now. Bobby Bowden did that. Joe Paterno did that. Paterno, I think, coached into his 80s. Is that right? Paterno coached into his 80s at Penn State? He coached into his 80s. So obviously there is a track record for some people doing this kind of stuff. But the point that I made, though, was that you have examples of this, but you don't have that many examples. That wouldn't it be good for ESPN to show a little bit of skepticism about, you know, the future of Nick Saban, given the fact that what else would Saban say right now, knowing the fact that he wants recruits to believe he's going to coach for a long time, even if he's not. Obviously, none of us control the future. Saban doesn't solely control his own future either. He may have a secret plan for how much longer he wants to coach. He may not know, but these things have a way of evolving pretty quickly, you know, given how, you know, circumstances might change. And it's almost like ESPN is serving as, an entity doing the bidding of Nick Saban on this and almost providing a de facto commercial for Saban by, you know, having the Paul Feinbaum show, which airs on the SEC network, have an ESPN guy say Saban's going to coach into his 70s. I think we're all kidding ourselves if we don't think that Saban then uses some of that to influence recruits. And, of course, I think the genesis for all of this is the fact that there was this SB Nation story the other day by Bud Elliott, another guy that I do like, who was talking about the fact that, you know, some recruits, and he had some quotes from some of the top recruits in the country who have said that they have heard from other coaches, no specificity about which coaches this is, but they have heard from other coaches that why would you want to go to Alabama? Nick Saban's not going to be there that much longer anyway, which to me is just the name of the game in recruiting. Now, this is not tiddlywinks. There's going to be some full contact recruiting going on, and some of the stuff that happens privately behind the scenes isn't always, you know, the same kind of language that would get used publicly here. I have no doubt there's some negative recruiting against Saban. I think all is fair when it comes to that kind of stuff, but for ESPN to become a de facto ally for Saban in this conversation, that's the part for me that strikes as sort of unfair here. So you can weigh in on this. It's actually going to be our Dog Day Q&A. We're going to do this in just a moment. If you want to weigh in on this subject, how much longer do you think Nick Saban plans to coach? That's our Dog Day Q&A. We will do that here in just a couple of moments. Before that, though, let me squeeze in a couple of other quick stories for our SEC through. And, of course, I'll invite you to check us out on SEC Country Live this afternoon at 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the SEC Country video channels. Another story we dealt with earlier in the week was Philip Fulmer, the Tennessee Athletic Director, speaking in Chattanooga as a part of this big orange caravan that goes on. You know, Georgia doesn't do as much of this kind of stuff. Some of these SEC schools now do more of these. Tennessee's doing a lot of them, I think. Chattanooga, I guess, was the first stop. And Fulmer was asked by Mike Griffith, our colleague from SEC Country, what the message was speaking to the Tennessee fans there that day. And he talked about the fact that there is stability in the athletic department now. Of course, that sort of seems to contradict some of the other stuff happening above Fulmer's head, like the chancellor recently ousted, the previous athletic director gone in sort of unceremonious fashion. But Fulmer says there's stability now, and he also says we need patience from Tennessee fans. And a lot of y'all know a lot of Tennessee fans. I think a lot of you know that a lot of Tennessee fans don't have any more patience to give. So this is, for Georgia fans, I think, a sort of a morbid curiosity, because I think there is a powder keg at Tennessee right now of a program with a pretty fiery coach who may end up being pretty good, but a Tennessee fan base that is, to say the least, restless. So there could be some interesting stuff coming down the line on Tennessee. And I'll also squeeze in one more point before we get to our Dog Day Q&A. I saw Brian McClendon, the former Georgia assistant, now South Carolina offensive coordinator, respond back to Tommy Luganville. All of this on Dacrion Joyner, a player recruited as a quarterback to South Carolina, but maybe not the most efficient spring for Joyner. You know, there was some thought on the recruiting trail that he might be a wide receiver, and now I guess there's also some talk about Luganville that he should switch to wide receiver. And McClendon, speaking in Atlanta, says he doesn't think that Joyner has to do that yet. This is one of those deals that a lot of programs have to deal with. You obviously, you know, a lot of programs bring a lot of guys in with a lot of promises. Hey, you can play quarterback here. Sometimes that stuff has a way of dissolving. We'll see what the future holds for Dacrion Joyner in a South Carolina uniform. But for now, at least, the former Georgia assistant McClendon, at least trying to push back against the narrative, and we'll make that your SEC through. Here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza, for those of you watching on video, we'll tell you that coming up in just a couple moments, a really special treat for us. You know, you hear me talk a lot about Marco's Pizza, and today we're going to be very happy in a couple of minutes to welcome in Pat Giammarco, the founder of Marco's Pizza. He's got a great story to tell, and he is a great friend to not just Dog Nation Daily, but Dog Nation in general, those of you that watch and listen to our show every single day. So on video, video today in a couple of minutes when our regular broadcast ends. It's going to be great to get a chance to welcome him onto the show today. Also, want to take a couple comments from you as a part of our Dog Day Q&A. You know, I gave my thoughts earlier about Nick Saban and ESPN sort of helping with the narrative that Saban's going to coach into his 70s. What I said was, maybe he does, but isn't there at least some room for some skepticism on this issue? And isn't ESPN almost helping Saban with its in Alabama with its recruiting efforts by pushing this narrative as freely as it's pushing it? I want to let you weigh in on that right now. Let me go to the Facebook page here first. We will go to YouTube here in a moment as well, and we'll kind of talk about that. Philip Jordan Wells kind of mocking the Feinbaum show where Chris Lowe was on. Listen, I don't have a problem with Feinbaum. I really don't have a problem with Chris Lowe, who I think is a good reporter. I just think the job of a good reporter in some respects is to show a little skepticism for the subject you're covering. When it comes to Saban, sometimes I don't know that we get enough of that. Chris Branham on Facebook says, I believe Saban can coach for another 5 to 10 years, but if Georgia can start scoring some head-to-head wins, some of that sheen on the Alabama program is going to start to wear off. If the recruiting ability starts to diminish, the clock's going to start ticking. I agree with Chris on this full-heartedly, and I've said this before, that if they finish 8th in recruiting again, I think Saban's gone. I think he's packing his bags. I think he's getting out of there. I think he knows the pressure that comes from being the Alabama head coach. I don't think he wants to face that fan base with less than elite talent, less than superior talent to the teams that he's playing. I don't think he wants to face the rest of the SEC with even talent. Now, to Alabama's credit, as Jeff Sintel said on Dog Nation Daily presented by Marcos Pizza yesterday, there was a big overhaul in the way Alabama did its business over the course of this offseason. And you can't deny that the 2019 recruiting cycle for Alabama is going a lot better than the 2018 cycle did. So maybe we're all right when we say that Saban will only stick around as long as he's recruiting at an elite level. But right now, the 2019 class, Alabama has either recently gotten some big wins or expects to get some more big wins coming up. And I do agree with the commenter who said that's going to go a long way in determining how long Nick Saban stays around Alabama. Al Clements on Facebook says, Saban's going to continue to coach until Kirby shows the nation that he's not the king of coaching any longer. Look at the Bear. So I think that Al's also bringing up what I think is a pretty good point here, is that the reason why we're even talking about this today on our program is because a large portion of this is incredibly relevant to Georgia, because if Saban gets pushed into retirement, it is Kirby Smart in Georgia who are the best candidates to push him in that direction. Because if you look at the 2017 recruiting cycle, we saw guys like D'Angelo Gibbs and Walter Grant come to Georgia. Those were head-to-head wins against Alabama, foreshadowing what happened in 2018, where you saw a lot more head-to-head wins coming for Georgia against Alabama. Guys like Nadab Joseph, guys like Brenton Cox, guys like Adam Anderson. You know, it is not that often lately that you've seen a team in the SEC, or really any team in college football, Clemson, Ohio State included, who've gone head-to-head with Alabama in recruiting and won some of those battles. Georgia did that. It sets up a high noon showdown for the 2019 class. And what's at stake here could be the future of Nick Saban at Alabama. How much longer does he want to stay around? The number of elite players that he's bringing in is going to go a long way in determining that. Head-to-head wins against Georgia are going to be crucial here. And I, for one, cannot wait to watch it play out. All right, so for now, we'll wrap up our regular broadcast. And on video, we'll get ready to say hello to Pat Giamarco, the founder of Marco's Pizza, for a great conversation, one that I've been really looking forward to. Let me take care of a couple of pieces of business before we get there, though. Of course, here every day on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza, we remind you that a good Georgia fan is a Gator hater first and foremost. And we want to let you know that 164 days from right now, Georgia goes back to Jacksonville in the world's largest outdoor cocktail party and gets another win of the Florida Gators. It's our Gator Hater Countdown. We do it every single day here on our Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza, and we appreciate you being a part of it. Let me also take care of one other piece of business. We have talked a little bit over the last few days about Georgia baseball. Georgia baseball has got a huge series coming up this weekend, weather permitting. And as I look out the window here in Georgia, the weather is miserable on Wednesday. They got a Thursday, Friday, Saturday deal against Arkansas. And some news from the Hogs here. Grant Koch, probably the best catcher in the SEC, he may not be available because of injury. We'll see how that impacts this series and see you tomorrow here on Dog Nation Daily.